Good evening, James McCanney here with My Science Hour, March 16th, 2017. First of all, I'm going to talk about the Trump budget cuts, and this was expected. I could have seen more cuts in science, but understand, if I were a director of science at the national level, scientists would love me because I would cut out the middleman, top-down directive science and give scientists their research back, and I'd give them ownership of their research, and I would give them funding directly for proposals that they wrote. And so all of this massive Washington oversight over basically a tremendous amount of money that goes to managing the money would simply go away. I see that he cut NASA's Department of Education, and other programs like NOAA had a great deal of cutting behind the scenes also. So anyway, let me just go through some of this. I'll start at the top. Many what you might call endowment programs were just cut to zero. And the Environmental Protection Agency down 31%. The Department of State down 30%. Department of Labor down 20%. I mean, do they really create jobs? Department of Agriculture down 20%. Department of Health and Human Services, Department of Commerce, Department of Education, Housing, Urban Development, HUD, and the Department of Transportation. The Department of the Interior was the least cut at about 12%. And so, anyway, what do I really think about this? Very simply, federal government has gotten too big. With private investments, which Trump is bringing in trillions of dollars of investment with handshakes because he knows there's a high, high level of confidence now for investors, both local and foreign, to invest in the United States. And this is already happening. So if you take the money that, you know, that money out of your pocket, the $500 or $1,000 or $5,000 or whatever that you pay in taxes every year, that money multiplied by, you know, 150, 200 million people adds up to a lot of money that then can be put back into the economy. So dropping taxes, dropping government agencies, which do nothing but corner the market and are basically catering to special interest groups that sit at the trough to fill their pockets. You know, the university professors, etc., have forgotten how to forage for money. And so anyway, real scientists would be getting real money for real projects from real companies to do real things. Not, you know, this is why we're strapped with the three-blade wind generator, which doesn't work. And I'll be talking more about that in a little while. The government incentives are ending, thank goodness for those, but they're going to put in another probably 10,000 of those things this year. They sit out there. They don't work. The ones you see spinning are because there's a motor inside there that makes them spin. It actually costs electricity. But the guys that put these in are getting probably $1 million a piece. They're getting them for free. But you know what's going to happen is they're going to stop any maintenance work on any of these. They're going to all break down, and they're going to sit there like giant dinosaurs scouring the landscape. But this is what happens when government gets into the picture. None of that would be there in a real business world because they can't produce energy and they don't make money. They don't produce electricity. And so the only way these people get money is through government subsidies. And I'll be going into some actual numbers there later in the show. So At any rate, my hat's off to government cuts. You know, the NOAA program, cut it to the bone. The International Monetary Fund, nearly a billion dollars chopped out of there. Funding for the United Nations chopped. The list of agencies goes on and on. Let me correct something I said a little while ago. I said if I were head of the science directive in Washington, D.C., scientists would love me. Some of them would, because the real scientists would. The tier two scientists that have drool buckets on the side of their mouth and only know how to write a government grant, because that's all they've ever done, to answer a request of some government agency and pretend like they're going to make some great discovery so they can get the grant money, those guys would not like me, because they'd have to come down and actually create original science, something they can't do, even though they got a nice PhD, shiny little poster up on their wall. But they can't create real, new, innovative science. So those guys would be lost. So they wouldn't like me at all, because their little government program niche would be bye-bye. At any rate, real scientists doing real research for real corporations with real investment to produce real products that benefit you really, that's the future. And so I just saw somebody writing in, somebody trying to sell a 450-watt wind generator as a 5-kilowatt-hour-per-day generator. I mean, it's not even possible. But people are trying to sell this, and somebody wrote to me and said, you know, they're trying to pawn this off on them as something that'll take over and provide them with complete electricity. Just a complete joke. But at any rate, the funding agencies that are just getting dumped here, I personally think that the cut should be much higher. But at any rate, Congress is going to take this and of course, do some pushback, because a lot of this agency money got them elected, and the ability of companies to scavenger this money out of the federal government. Okay, a bit of a science topic here. This in from a listener. This is published in the Daily Mail, so I wouldn't put too much credence in this. But this is following the narrative that, for example, Elon Musk is supposedly going to send two guys to the moon next year. Excuse me, but I don't think I'd really pay money. They have not sent a person around the moon. They have not sent a spacecraft around the moon. They've never sent a spacecraft out of low Earth orbit, let alone with a mouse or a monkey or anything else. So why would two people jump on this spacecraft and go around the moon for a week when there's not a shred of proven hardware here? Not the least of which the problem is going through the radiation belts. But this is all what I'm realizing, that all of this narrative is fake. This is a giant fake news story to make it sound like going into space is just not a problem at all. So here we go. Daily Mail, one of the biggest disinformation rags on the planet. Here's what it says, published yesterday. It says, Earth's inner Van Allen belt is far weaker than thought and could lead to radical new spacecraft designs, NASA reveals. And then it says that it was thought that the inner belt, the radiation Van Allen belt, had super fast electrons adding to the radiation, but now observations reveal that there are typically none of these electrons. Oh, isn't that cute? Anyway, they showed that the electrons were pushed in by geomagnetic storms, which is in a sense true. I mean, they don't know what really causes this. I can tell you what causes it. This is due to the discharge of the solar capacitor, and the electron stream coming from the sun feeds the Van Allen belts as the storm proceeds, and this is due to discharge of the solar capacitor. So at any rate, but what they've done here is the equivalent of a climate change scientist sticking a thermometer out the window and going, looks like it's a bit warmer today. I think I'll say that the Earth is warming, that there's climate change going on. Okay, so at any rate, what they did is they sent a satellite up and did some temporary measurements, very little, and then they said, there's no electrons here. It's been known for a very long time that the electron populations vary. And right now we're in a quiescent period of solar activity. But if you're in a spacecraft and you just happen to go through the Van Allen belts and all of a sudden they kick up and you get a blast of relativistic electrons, let me explain something. You are going to be in a pile of heat, very serious heat. Remember last week I reported that NASA, through a private company, invented what I call the magic vest. You put this on, it's like a vest about the size of a vest you would wear in cold weather. Okay, so you put this magic vest on, and it supposedly protects your vital organs from radiation in outer space. They don't say a word about what kind of radiation or what levels of radiation or what they would expect radiation levels should be, and then claim that this vest magically protects you, but it doesn't protect your head or your reproductive organs or your lower stomach. And so this is just absurd. I mean, let me tell you something. If you went through the Van Allen radiation belts when there was high energy, especially the electrons, but protons also are there, these are going to hit any metal in the spacecraft. They're going to make it into an X-ray generator, and you are going to be French fried unless you got about 3 inches of solid lead. And if they're higher energy, you're going to need more inches of lead around you. So, but here's the point. I don't want to go into this in a lot of detail. People going to the moon, NASA going to colonize Mars, all of this, Jeff Bezos now is going to go to the moon, etc. Everybody's going to Mars and the moon. Let me tell you something. This is all a fake news narrative, and it's coming clearly from the CIA because they like to use their science, pushing these science bozo stories out on the public through the Daily Mail. That's one of their favorite. The BBC is another one. Nature Magazine is another one. Okay. So at any rate, I don't want to spend a lot of time on this, but the issue is that nobody's going to the moon. Nobody's going around the moon. Nobody's going to do any of this, and I expect that all of the pictures or photographs are going to be completely faked. Completely faked. And that's so they can continue getting money to make it look like it's just not a big deal. Real easy. Now, I've been asked to comment on Antarctica. There's a lot of chatter around the internet, etc., and people making claims that are really not verified. But I was asked this literally a couple months ago on the John Moore Show. I've commented on this many times, actually. I've talked about it in my work relative to Atlantis to Tesla, the Colburn Connection, and in talking about Antarctica. The issue is that with Antarctica, it was at a temperate climate in history within the past 10,000 years. And what we call the North Pole, which is basically a big floating chunk of ice, was an open water passageway. The old North Pole was in what we now call Ontario, just north of the state of Michigan. And the reason I know this is because the Mayan cities that I surveyed, this was in the about mid-1990s, and I reported on this, it's on my webpage. They point in they were rebuilt on the old city structures, and the old city structures point in a northeast-southwest direction. Let's take, for example, Chichen Itza, which points at about a 13.5 degree angle from true north, south, east, and west. And I went out in the jungle and found the old markers, the markers that the entrance to the city, etc. And these are skewed by 13.5 degrees. So you take that and you take Uxmal and Tulum and the other cities down there, and you do a directive on these. These were rebuilt, and it's known that they were rebuilt many times. basically every 54 years, according to the Mayan calendar, because of the event of Venus, which is prominent in the Mayan mythologies. That Venus destroyed the Earth, it came back and destroyed it, really destroyed it a second time. And they did a Passover. The Mayans had a Passover event where they literally painted blood on top of the doors, just like the Israelite Passover event. And the end result is that Antarctica, there was a pole shift. And the old South Pole was near a place in the South Indian Ocean, or it's down in the South Pacific, called McDonald Island. But Antarctica was a temperate climate continent at the time, populated. And so I said this when I was asked on the air, what was my opinion of all the activity going on in Antarctica? And I said, clearly they have discovered ancient ruins, probably mastodon remains, that were frozen in place. Now that it's melting, they're having a relatively warm summer. It's through December 21st was the middle of summer in Antarctica, and the melt was quite exceptional this year. So they started seeing these buildings, etc. Lake Vostok, which the Russians have explored extensively, sits under 2 miles of ice. But anyway, this is what's going on. There's no question about it that Antarctica has some major discoveries, and they're keeping this from the public, as they do with everything. So this is information that is only guarded very highly by the world, basically the banking elite, who are the same ones. They're the Baal worshippers. They are the people that worship Baal and the planet Mars, etc., which I've talked about. I have quite a bit of this on my paid cast back in the last fall, if you go to my paid casts. So at any rate, that's what's going on. Very clearly, that's what's going on in Antarctica. There have been major discoveries. They're not telling us about it. It's not like we can get down there easily to confirm this on the ground, but there's no question that there have been major archaeological discoveries there. Just a quick comment on Julian Assange, the Vault 7 release of the last couple of weeks, where they've actually exposed the CIA for basically dirty tricks. All of the Trojans that they unleash on the public that infect your computers, infect your software, infect businesses, that use this data then to undermine the profitability and the success of American business, etc., and businesses all over the world and governments, etc. It shows how they could duplicate Russian hacking and then make the claim that there was Russian hacking. And this is something I've said long ago. I'm spent 25 years of my life in the computer industry in both design of telecommunications computers and software, etc., high-level design, and also in telecommunications, actually managing, and that's the best word I can use, digital networks of all sizes and scales, and national, international level. So I know what I'm talking about. I also wrote the code that broke the RSA codes in 2007. And they're still using RSA codes. I wrote the book Breaking RSA Codes for Fun and Profit. It's available on my website. The Calculate Primes book is the 2007 release. The Breaking RSA Codes for Fun and Profit 2014 release. And this is no secret to me. The CIA paid the RSA Corporation to infiltrate one of their software releases, and the CIA literally paid and the NSA paid these companies to release the secret code so that they could get into businesses, etc. So there's no surprise to me. But this puts, I would say, the frosting on the cake. And so you have people like Senator Feinstein, who is head of the one of the intelligence oversight committees in Congress. Well, they know all about this. And when asked, do these agencies spy on the American people? You know, they give an answer like, well, they're not supposed to, and certainly they follow the law. No, this is what Snowden was all about. This is what Julian Assange was all about. But what's more is they released a lot of the documents and the specifics of the software showing that the CIA or the NSA or any of the other 17 intelligence agencies in Washington can go in through your television, through your computer, through your cell phone, through smart meters, and through other devices to spy on you. And literally, they capture this data all the time. It's not like they go, let's go over here to John or John's house and see what he's doing now. No, they're capturing the data all the time. So everything you do in your house is being trapped and recorded and put into a database. And it's not like somebody's sitting there looking at it all the time, but if they want to all of a sudden, okay, let's go and see what John's been up to, somebody can go in and look at all of your comings and goings, doing whatever you're doing for the last 10 years, and go, oh, here he did something wrong. I think we can go put some pressure on him and possibly bring him up on charges based on data that they are just gathering. This is metadata, which they're gathering in bulk. This is not protecting the country. These corporations, and basically that's what they are, because they work for the World Bank, and I've always said this, these agencies do not work for the federal government. They don't work for your benefit. This dialogue that they're somehow protecting against terrorism, when's the last time you heard of them catching a terrorist? You know, no. They're letting terrorists in by the boatload. And without any papers, without any documentation. That's what these agencies are doing. And thank goodness they're making an attempt to stop this. But you can see that the federal judges are in on the fix, etc. Trump is trying to protect the borders. And the federal judges are trying to block him at any pass. But hats off to Julian Assange and the other people that are exposing the corruption, the unbelievable level of corruption in the federal government. Before I forget, I want to make an announcement. I talked to Neil Wolfe, that's W-O-L-F-E. He is staging a get-together, hopefully with tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands or more people, at Lafayette Park. This is in Washington, D.C. on March 25th, 2017. This coming March 25th, that's a Saturday, at 11 a.m. This is right outside the White House, to basically talk about the severe levels of pedophilia in the federal government. And now, this is not a show that typically I would make this announcement on, but this is something that is rampant in the federal government, and it's at the core of a lot of what's going on. A lot of the control of people in the federal government is based on being compromised through these channels. And so anyway, I just want to make people aware of this. Once again, that's March 25th, Saturday, at Lafayette Park, right outside of the White House, Washington, D.C., 11 a.m. Eastern Standard Time. And this is to give a voice to the victims of people who are kidnapped, mainly children, and basically brutalized, and then a lot of them never make it out. Let's put it that way. And this is rampant in Washington, D.C. And it's something that many people have tried to investigate this and have basically, a lot of them have died doing this. So this is a group of people who are very serious about cracking into these rings of pedophilia, which are not only rings. This goes on with a lot of other issues. I've talked about Baal worship and Satan worship and groups that are active in government and world control right now, and it goes all the way to the top. So at any rate, I just want to make you aware of that. And it's a topic that's difficult to talk about, but the, as I say, the victims have no voice. And so on a show regarding science, you might say, what does that have to do with science? Well, if we don't have a government which is actually dealing honestly and is not involved in this extremely low level of activity, then we have real problems in all walks of life, not only science, but all walks of life. We have the Venus inferior conjunction coming up, also interestingly enough, on March 25th. And I'm expecting, I've already announced this, a rise in influenza. That always occurs because we get the viruses that are built in the comet tail of Venus. Now, this is not fairy tale science. It goes back to the 1200s when the Chinese first discovered this and have recorded it ever since. It's cataloged and documented in modern medical journals. And also there's an increase in sunspot activity during the same time. That's when Venus comes between us and the sun. And then on the 7th of April, we have the Jupiter opposition, where we can expect for probably a week period there, the Jupiter winds. It happens every about 13 months. So something to keep an eye on there. Just a quick notice, my paid cast for this week deals with the Cosmos series, The Real Story, where I have an ongoing series where I use the talking points of the Carl Sagan Cosmos series produced in the year 2000, or was in 1981, I believe it was released, 81. And then the Neil deGrasse and Tyson Cosmos series that was released in 2014. But mainly the Sagan Cosmos series, because not a lot has changed since then in terms of standard cosmology or scientific so-called theory on how the world works or where we came from, etc. So anyway, that's this week's paid cast, and that series will be ongoing. It's somewhat my statement, and then that will be packaged at the end. But if you're in the paid cast, you will get this basically included in the paid cast for $3.95 a month. If you have not joined the paid cast yet, go to my webpage, scroll down. There's a link to join. You'll go to a subpage where you can then use PayPal buttons. It's $3.95 a month. And that helps me. And I really enjoy these paid casts because they're full-hour lectures on esoteric scientific topics without any other discussion of other topics that, like, for example, I have to include in this show. A listener requested that I talk about geoengineering. And this is a topic that's been highly, highly infiltrated because when, let's say, global climate change was a topic, that hopefully it's being just cut asunder right now because Trump is really slashing into the EPA. And that's where a lot of this came from. You may not know that. But the entire concept, I told people back in the, when it started to gain popularity as global warming, back in the mid-1990s, it actually was gaining momentum back in the late 70s or early the 1980s. But it wasn't something that people were concerned about. And it was literally Carl Sagan that got this going. Because when NASA arrived at Venus, they believed Venus would be an Earth-like planet with dinosaurs and animals, etc., walking around. And they got there, and it's this steaming hot planet with a surface hot enough to melt lead. And so they had to come up with this narrative, and it was Carl Sagan that championed the idea of the greenhouse effect. And then they realized that that didn't work, so they came up with the exaggerated greenhouse effect. I mean, talk about throwing in the old Schwanz factor. The Schwanz factor, we used to call when we were in college, that the students who were not very good students would come into a laboratory and do an experiment, and they knew what the result was supposed to be, and they knew what the initial parameters were, and they'd kind of start from the end and write backwards, and then they'd start at the beginning and write forwards, and somewhere magically in the middle, they'd come up with some, we called it the Schwann's factor, the thing that made everything work. Now, that was the greenhouse effect and the exaggerated greenhouse effect, and you notice nobody talks about the greenhouse effect. They never say that word, but that's what this global warming and carbon tax, oh my goodness, the poor Canadian people are paying through the nose carbon tax based on Carl Sagan's idiocy. And so it was discovered for many, many reasons that the greenhouse effect did not work on Venus, which has this massive CO2 atmosphere. So then how could possibly the greenhouse effect work on Earth that has a very minute CO2 water-based atmosphere? Well, it turns out that it doesn't. The Earth is warming up because we're coming out of an ice age that happened a number of thousands of years ago when we went through the Venus event. So we had a cooling period. We had an influx of water. The glaciers, we had a pole shift. We had the Great Glaciers. Some of them melted. Other ones reformed, and that's what I was talking about, Antarctica. But the bottom line is then they changed it to global climate change as the ultimate term. Then they instead of the greenhouse effect, they called it global warming. Then after global warming, they realized that the Earth is actually cooling a bit recently, so they called it global climate change. Whatever fits in the bottle, that's what they put. And so anyway, that's one side of the coin. The other side of the coin is weather manipulation, and it started a long time ago. Of course, back in the 30s, they were seeding clouds with a silver chemical that actually, they believed it would seed clouds to cause it to rain. You can go much farther back to where you had people dancing around fires in the middle of the night, beseeching the powers that be to make it rain, the rain dance. But things got serious, literally post-World War II, when they started actually examining data, actually started proposing ideas. But the HARP, and a lot of people have heard the term HARP, and it's basically a scalar radio antenna which can be tuned and directed. So it can bounce off the ionosphere and can converge on a place like if the HARP facility is in Washington State, the signals could converge on Paris, France, for example. And that was used as an atmospheric conditioning device. And so, but it was not very effective in controlling weather. And the type of research that I worked on in the mid-1990s with the Russian scientists, Alexei Dmitriev and Alex Tetanov and the group in Novosibirsk and Central Russia, they were very interested in my work, and they were looking at ways to manipulate weather, but they didn't understand it. They saw tornadoes on the sun. They realized that Mars had weather activity that was not based on water at all. There's no water in the atmosphere in Mars. And so they really didn't understand what was driving these weather systems until they got a hold of my work. And so that's why they were very interested in it. And then what we did was develop, based on my theoretical models, the satellite design for basically increasing energy and directing storm systems. And also it dispelled the idea that hurricanes form from warm water. Totally absurd idea. We see hurricanes on Mars. We see hurricanes on Jupiter. Where's the warm water? You know, it's just beyond absurd that people keep talking about this. And that's the official narrative of the government-supported scientists. And that's why government-supported science should just go away, because it has no new research. It's just a record that's skipping. It just keeps going back to the same track and back to the same track. and it can't get out of the rut because it keeps getting the money every year. Well, private industry would not fund that because they'd realize immediately it doesn't work and it has no predictive value. And those are the kind of scientists that would not like me because they'd have to come up with real science. And the only possibility for those yokes would be if they went out and stole work and tried to make it theirs. But at any rate, on to the idea of geoengineering. Okay, so if you can control the weather for a day, you can probably control it for a week. And then you could do it for a month or 10 months or 2 years. And that's climate control and climate manipulation. And we've actually seen this type of thing in the California drought or extended rain periods in Texas, etc. But the out of this then grew a group of people that were opposed to geoengineering. Immediately, as happens with all kinds of groups that of this genre, whether it's MUFON, whether it's the Skywatch, whether it's NOAA, whether it's a political group, Greenpeace, or whether it's the Green Tea Party or whatever, they're infiltrated like immediately. And that's why I personally work alone. I work alone because you cannot infiltrate what I do because I know all the tricks. They've tried every trick in the book on me to try and get me to join other groups or, he's not being cooperative with this group or whatever. No, I've always worked alone. And you know what? I'm still here. All those other people have gone asunder and by the wayside unless the CIA keeps funding them, which is something that is ongoing with certain groups that basically try and steal my material or whatever. But back to geoengineering, it was immediately infiltrated. The anti-geoengineering groups. And to divert the topic, because they always, the CIA or whoever is controlling the narrative, always develops both sides of the narrative. They, in the 9/11, the so-called, hijackers were CIA ops. Low level, granted, but nonetheless, CIA ops. And so what they do is they control both sides of the narrative, because if there were real terrorism, they wouldn't know what to do. They'd have to do real work. And so geoengineering is a real topic. There's many methods to geoengineer weather. In fact, one day the GOES satellite, in looking at California, the GOES West satellite, was upgraded. It had a software upgrade. And whoever upgraded the software forgot to turn off turn on the software that monitored out the weather climate change effects that we could see in the weather. And so for about a day, we had all of the data coming in from all the weather manipulation that was occurring in California. And you could see it very, very clearly. And so then all of a sudden it all disappeared in a flash. And I wrote some articles on that and I said, yeah, that's what we were seeing, what was being subtracted out of the GOES satellite. This is the satellite that's supposedly giving us all the data we're supposed to have to understand weather. And 90% of it is filtered out because it's manipulated. California and Florida are two of the most manipulated weather places on the planet. Okay, so anyway, that's just a little bit of a short expose. I could go on for a very long time. And if you want more information, I suggest you read my weather book, The Principia Meteorologia, The Physics of Sun, Earth, Weather. And that goes into a lot more detail regarding weather, real weather, weather manipulation, etc. Okay, now to the main science topic. I'm going to hopefully get to the end of the show. I'll be talking about my projects that I'm working on in the background. These are large projects that require long periods of time. And then some of the things that you can do yourself immediately, you could go out and these are written up one of the places I have a subpage called 11 Earth, Mega Earth Projects for Changing Conditions on Earth. A lot of them have to do with water. And then at the end of my water book, which is available on my webpage, in fact, it goes free with every order, I send out a copy of the weather of the water book. And at the end, there's a chapter that talks about mega projects dealing with water and what the individual can do regarding water. So hopefully I'll get to that at the end of the show. But first I want to talk about the wing generator, not so much my wing generator. I want to talk about the so-called installed base of three-blade wind generators. Now, somebody was kind enough to send me some photos and some video footage of one of the installations that's out in California. And or actually, it might be Nevada. I'll have to check the source. But it's out, this is out of Palm Springs. Yeah. And so southwestern United States, big open desert area with fairly significant wind. And none of these three-blade wind generators are turning. I mean, a couple of them are moving very slowly, but that's due to the motor. There's an electric motor inside of these things, which makes them spin to get them going. And you can hear that the wind is significant, but none of these are turning. And the reason is they're probably all broken down. Most of the companies that make the three-blade wind generators had technical problems, and it's typically up in the gearbox, in the gimbals, etc., where the big three blades connect in. Because a lot of these will weigh on a 1.5 megawatt wind generator, which, by the way, is pretty small. I mean, it's a pretty, if you're doing commercial work, that's not a very big wind generator. But the point is, but they can't make them any bigger because they're physically, they break down. They have too many problems if they get any bigger. But the installed base, now, I did a little expose on this a while ago, but there's supposedly 80 gigawatts of installed base of wind generators in the United States. And if you divide that by 1.5 megawatts, you come up with the number 54,000. So what that tells you is there's an installed base of 54,000 three-blade wind generators in the United States. There's a few of them that are bigger, but on average, pretty much the bulk majority of them are 1.5 megawatts. And the problem is they don't work. They don't produce power. They sit there most of the time, and they were put in because of tax credits and tax incentives. And so the people that put them in got paid to put them in. They actually literally made money. And then after they, there's a certain cost installation and everything. So they really didn't make a lot of money. So the little pittance that they made with the tax incentives over what the installation cost was, they want to keep in their pocket. They're not going to come back and maintain these. The companies that built them typically have problems. Like I said, mainly up in the gimbals or the electronics, etc., up in the housing that sits up high on top of the post. So these people, these investors, are not going to put their hard-earned tax incentive money, or some of them didn't even make back their investment. They're waiting for these to produce enough electricity where they can get some money, but they're not going to take, by any standard, they're not going to take any of this money and put it into maintenance. So these, one by one, are just going to go defunct and sit there. Now, let's take a look at something. Let's pretend that these 54,000 wind generators could produce 1.5 megawatts of power. What does that come out to be? Let's run some numbers here. Now, imagine that they were producing this. Well, this would turn out to be about 80,000 megawatts of power, as I mentioned at the beginning. Now, an average nuclear power plant or an average coal-generating power plant produces, let's say, 500 megawatts. That's about average. Some are a little bigger, some are a little smaller. Some of the big ones, coal generating plants down in the American Southeast, are about maybe 2 gigawatts. So that would be 4 times 500 megawatts. So anyway, but let's just take an average 500 megawatt nuclear generator, which has a horrendous, horrendous infrastructure cost to put it up, and then it would only run for 20 years, not to mention the extreme cost in getting the fuel and processing it and then decommissioning this plant. The cost per kilowatt hour is astronomical. Okay, so, but let's imagine that aside from all of these costs, etc., that you have available 81,000 megawatts or 80 gigawatts. That would be the equivalent of about 160 nuclear power plants. Now, we only have 104 nuclear power plants running in the United States right now. So you have to ask the question, if we have an installed base of 54,000 wind generators, those three-blade wind generators out there which don't work, and they're putting in 10,000 more this year because this year the tax incentives are going to end, we could easily, with very easily, replace our entire nuclear fleet of nuclear power plants overnight with this wind energy. So where's the wind energy? We have not replaced even one nuclear power plant or one coal-fired power plant, not one, because of wind power. What is wrong with this picture? So the government is forking out money, and they're doing this in Canada. These three-blade wind generators are sitting out there idle. The people installing them, like Warren Buffett, made $28 billion this year by the past year, 2016. 2016, $28 billion, mainly off tax incentives of three-blade wind generators. Now, and there's not enough energy there to produce enough to replace even one nuclear power plant. What on earth? Let me repeat these numbers. That 54,000, this is not including the 10,000 they're going to install this year based on tax incentives. 54,000 wind generators at 1.5 megawatts each. This would be the equivalent, if they were all running at capacity, it would be the equivalent of 160 nuclear power plants. But in reality, there's not enough energy there to replace even one nuclear power plant or one coal plant. Is this beyond absurd? Anyway, okay, so this gets back to the term installed base. This is a term that you'll hear, and I don't think there's somebody's trying to block me from doing this show. The power just went out here. I'm doing this on battery, so we'll hope that I can get to the end of this show on batteries here. But the term installed base, the power companies love to use this and throw it out there and tell how great they are and how green they are. Well, the installed base, the entire installed base in the United States doesn't produce enough energy to make a dribble of difference. At any rate, I just wanted to talk about this so you understand this term installed base. So when you hear that in the news or you hear some power company bragging about their installed base, please stick it back in their nose or some stick it back someplace. And by the way, if my electricity holds out here, when I post this show to the archive, I will also be posting some photos and hopefully some video footage of this installation that's just one of many around the country. And by the way, in my book, McCanny Wing Generator World Energy Project, I do a calculation that to supply the world energy needs, one would have to install 77 million of the three-blade wind generators to produce enough energy. That's if they were running. That's if they were even running at 20%. you would have to install 77 million three-blade wind generators to produce enough energy to cover the world energy needs. And it's simply not going to happen. I mean, the United States probably has the biggest installed base in the world with 54,000, soon to be 64,000. Compared that to 77 million, ain't going to happen. But there again, that's when I designed my wing generator, that ultimately I designed it so that under 1,000 of them could power the entire United States energy need, including electric transportation, replacing petrol for oil, for automobiles, trains, buses, airplanes, motorcycles. Okay, now I'm going to go through, and this comes from my water book. You can look at one of the last chapters in the water book if you have a copy. If not, you could either email me or just buy something, anything, off of the secure web ordering page, and you get a free copy. The name of the chapter is Individual To-Do List. And it says, as promised, this book will give action items that must be accomplished to provide ourselves and future generations the water and, moreover, the access to water that will be essential to the well-being of all living entities on this planet. Okay, so here's the worldwide energy projects. There's 12 of them I have listed here. Remove power from the World Bank and their system of monetary control. And you might say, what does that have to do with water? Well, they're the top-down agency that owns water through their minion agencies around the world. Replace unbridled capitalism with sustained sustainable economies. In other words, just not taking resources and turning them into capitalism, capitalizing them until it's all gone. Number three, harvest the water resources that are being mismanaged and wasted, and that includes the South Pole, the North Pole, Greenland, and other glaciers. Number four, green the earth with wide-scale reforestation and indigenous plants based on organic agriculture. And something I've said before, that a lot of the global warming that we're experiencing is due to cutting down trees. Cutting down trees and exposing the sun to hit the ground is one of the major causes of global warming. Or putting cement down, which is even worse. Number five, provide access to water as an inalienable right of all humans. Replace aging pollution-generating sewage plants with dry toilet systems and prevent chemicals from entering the water system. Okay, I'm just checking my battery here. It's still holding out. Okay, let me read quickly because this may end at any moment here. Create systems of water transport to move and store water from parts of the world that are water rich to those that are water poor. Harvest rainwater. What a concept. We just let it go down the river and into the salty ocean. We should be harvesting rainwater. Drain the water from Yellowstone Lake to prevent this water from entering the volcanic chambers below, which would erupt and end life as we know it on Earth. And these are also in my subpage on my webpage, the 11, now 12, mega projects. Okay, next, create high-efficiency wind power and electrical transport systems for water. Then, of course, using my wing generator, which can pump water directly. Next, convert from an oil, coal, nuclear-based energy system to distributed wind electric with high-capacity storage capacitors. Eliminate the three-blade wind systems and replace with highly efficient wind systems of large gigawatt design, my wing generators. Next, reduce our water energy resource footprint. Create a society based on human values and social communication and replace the job-oriented slavery system that consumes resources without providing value. Okay, next. Okay, I'm going to check my battery just a second. It's still operating here. I may make it to the end. 10 tasks that everybody can do. Use of dry toilets. And that might be difficult if you're in a city, etc. You're already hooked into that horrible sewage system. that takes a little bit of dry human waste, mixes it with gallons of water, and then mixes that with tens of hundreds of gallons, if not thousands of gallons of fresh water, and then sends it into a so-called treatment plant that does not have the ability to remove chemicals from the water. Okay, next, what you can do, reduce your energy, water, resource footprint. Next, create a sustainable existence for you and your family. Convert from oil to electric vehicles and promote a future of high-efficiency wind energy as a basis of electricity. And just note that if using an electric car that derives its energy from coal or nuclear power is not an improvement, it's actually worse than just burning the gasoline or diesel. Next, use water filtration to guarantee you and your family are your own source of water. Create your own water independence. Use reusable metal storage water bottles rather than disposable plastic water bottles. That's very important. I'll read it again. Use reusable metal storage water bottles rather than disposable plastic. So everybody has their own water. You fill your water bottle at your house from your own water filter. Stop buying those plastic, terribly polluting water bottles, those thin little clear ones. Ugh. Do your part to spread awareness. Educate by your actions. Invite others to see how you live and smile and be happy. Life is to enjoy. The evening news is designed to make you worry and remain as a good slave. Don't let them control your life. Okay, so let me see how I'm doing here. I've got about a minute and a half left. Anyway, by the way, my sale for water filters is still on the webpage. I'm going to let it run a couple more days. Let me just say now till Sunday night, by request, many people wrote in and said, you know, I'm waiting for a check. I got my Social Security. I don't have money right now. Can you wait a little longer? And I said, okay, people really need these products. And I'll tell you, when they get them, they are very happy. We're dealing with a lot of people on marginal incomes. So I'm going to leave these sale prices up till Sunday night. Try and get in there if you can. If you have real problems, email me, and we'll figure something out. But I can't leave this sale up forever. But people are responding, and they are very thankful for these water filter products. And I'm very proud of my water filter line. There's nothing like this on the planet. So go there, jmccsci.com. No other filter takes out everything all in one filter. Everybody else needs the add-ons, etc. They don't tell you that, but those add-ons don't last long, and they're very expensive. So at any rate, and then also make sure you join my paid cast, all of that on my webpage, jmccsci.com. This is Jim McCanny. This is my Science Hour. And as always, we are at the crossroads. Good night.